Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Homeopathy Hangout. Today we are speaking with Amy Lansky. She has a degree in mathematics and a doctorate in computer science, and she's worked at SRI International, NASA, and Stanford. Amy then made a very unusual career move. She became a student, writer, and promoter of homeopathic medicine. This was prompted by the miraculous cure of her son's autism with homeopathy. She is dedicated to helping others, especially families with children with autism, to discover the curative powers of homeopathy. Let's jump right into the interview. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Amy.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
It's such a pleasure. So this is our very first podcast episode, and I couldn't think of a person that's more fitting to have on than you, because your book, Impossible Cure, was one of my very first textbooks when I was studying to become a homeopath over 10 years ago. So it's just so incredibly awesome to have you on today. So let's jump right in. How does a NASA computer scientist end up writing a book on homeopathy? Can you please tell our listeners about your journey on how you discovered homeopathy and how it led you to write Impossible Cure?
Right. Well, actually, I think the beginning of my book discusses that, because it really was not just a journey to alternative medicine, but really to a complete shift in my whole, like my husband and I's perception of reality in many ways. So it was a completely life-changing experience in the end. So, before I really discovered homeopathy, you know, I had heard of it. You know, I see stuff in the health food store, but I never used it. And I was totally allopathic, you know. I had to have two sons, and my younger son, Max, was like he was three, and this was in 1994, and he was one of the first kids in the epidemic of autism, we now realize. And we were going through, there was just not the resources for that back then, and we were just like going to the therapist, and we didn't know what was going on. And at some point, I read this magazine called Mothering Magazine. I don't know if you have it in Australia, but it was an alternative. I think it still exists, but it's become much more conventional. But it's an alternative parenting magazine. And there was an article by Judith Reichenberg-Ullman, a three-page article of explaining homeopathy for ADD. And she was claiming that she had this huge success. So I thought, I don't know what it was. Well, it was fate. See, now I know, because all the studies I've done later, I had a information from above that this was it. It was like, I said, this is it. I was lying in bed reading this article. I said, Steve, read this article. And I just said, this is it. So I had a friend who was an acupuncturist. I said, who's a homeopath? And the man who became our homeopath had just moved to our area and set up his first practice. Mm-hmm. And really, we were one of his first patients.
Wow.
And we walked into the office not knowing anything, really. And we had our interview, and we were very lucky. Now I know a lot more. This was a long time ago, over 25 years ago. And the first remedy he prescribed was the right one. I mean, so we started giving it in LM potencies. And within less than a week, we were noticing just these subtle changes in him. So much so that his therapist said, what did you do? And he just was more connected to us, less distant, less, there was just a shift, very subtle. So anyway, time went on, and we just kept doing it. And this was not quick. People write to me now from all over the world about autism treatment, especially. And I said, even in the most optimal case, which my son was, in a way, this was not quick. This was a process, you know. But within We started when he was 3.5. By the time he was 5, he was testing normally. But he was still a little odd. You know, there was still stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And the therapist was so, she could not believe what happened. She says, I cannot believe what happened. So, and so much so that she invited me and my homeopath to come give a talk for her clinic. And this is the number one speech and language therapist in Palo Alto. Okay. You know, bastion of allopathic medicine, Palo Alto, Stanford, right? So that just started us on the voyage, and it just slowly became our primary form of treatment. And the time there was some online magazine, and somebody had heard, and they said, will you write an article? And at the time, I wrote this article. I can't remember what the name of the online journal was. And then there were changes in my work at NASA and stuff like that. And I just realized, I started like studying homeopathy more. I was taking this class, and then I thought, I've got to tell, this was such a miracle. I have to write a book, you know, and I'm a researcher. I have a PhD. And, you know, I write all the time. I thought, okay, I'm going to write this book and let people know. So really, that was my motivation. It was like, I have to let people know what happened to our family. It was really just a really about that. I was driven. I was driven. So that's how it happened, because that's I really amazing. Truly was, you know, my kids went to the doctor, took all the vaccines up to that point. Mm-hmm. And I just would never have questioned.
Mm-hmm. That's happened. So amazing. And Max is now an adult. And what's he doing these days?
Yeah. Max is 30, believe it or not. So, right. This was all 26, 27 years ago.
Wow, amazing.
And he's man, if you saw him, you would never guess that he was autistic, because he's an extremely social and very handsome guy. He I can tell you a little bit more about how he progressed over the years, but by the time he was in high school, he was fine.
Amazing. Does he remember much about being a child with autism? Do you think he has any messages that he would pass on to families with children with autism?
He remembers a feeling of frustration. Mm-hmm. He remembers that he was trying to like at one point we had him in this Montessori school because he could do his own thing and be by himself. And mm-hmm. And he remembered trying to communicate and like feeling very angry and frustrated mm-hmm. that he couldn't communicate what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And actually, when he finally, because of homeopathy, started trying to communicate, and they were not used to him being, you know, he was like starting to talk using toilet talk and saying inappropriate things, and they didn't like it. So at that point, they actually said to me, can you put him back the way he was?
Wow.
So I switched him to a new school, and they didn't think anything was wrong with it. Anyway, he remembers that frustration. He also, interestingly, feels that he's working on this now, that somehow it was that he was a burden, or that what we went through was difficult for us. Mm-hmm. Now this is his adult. I said, are you kidding? If it wasn't for what happened, you gave a gift to the world and our family. Really? So anyway, what's he doing? He went to USC film school, which is the top film school in the United States. Amazing. To become an animator, and he's been living in LA since then, and he was working for many years as a motion graphics artist, because you can make more money than animation, and then COVID hit, and, you know, LA dried up for a year, and he had money saved, he was on unemployment, and he says, I'm going to take this time, and he's trying to become an actor.
Wow, amazing.
And he's getting traction. I don't know if you want me to go on and on about this, but he's done 2 commercials.
Aww.
And he, you know, it's hard to become an actor. Mm-hmm. And he just recently did a short movie mm-hmm. where he was one of the lead characters. And one of the people in it was somebody who's actually been on TV. So she was more experienced mm-hmm. on a TV show. And she said, "You are ready to get an agent."
Wow.
So
you know, this is so encouraging to hear, because you know, this was a child with autism doing all these amazing things now. And that's exactly what I want our listeners to hear. You know, I have so many families with children with autism in my clinic, and mm-hmm. to hear from somebody like yourself, this experience that you've gone through and what Max is doing now is exactly, you know, that little glimmer of light that they sometimes need in those dark days when things just seem so tough. So it's wonderful hearing this. I'm so glad. And you have another son called Isaac who lives in Australia. So it's nice to have that
opportunity.
That's
right. So sadly cool. for me, because I have no access to him now. I mean, my son Isaac actually has now become an Australian citizen, so he's a dual citizen. And he works at Google in Sydney. And of course, I've been wanting him to come back, but he's been there 8 years now. And now he can't.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if he could, it would be a one-way ticket. So, but he uses homeopathy too.
Amazing.
And he's, you know, he's an extremely successful guy at Google. So he's 33.
Incredible. I'm just wondering, Amy, so I know this is a couple of decades now since you've sort of had a child with autism yourself. But do you have any advice for families with children with autism?
Yeah.
And also other therapies that you found useful? Any sort of advice for our listeners who, you know, are in the situation you were all those years ago? Any advice that you can give for them?
So, you know, people write to me. I mean, I probably get emails every day almost mm-hmm. from parents. And I want to say I'm not a practitioner and I don't see it, but I've never not responded to somebody. And I just try to give advice or guidance. I don't treat, and I never charge, because I view this as my thank you to the universe. But I don't talk to people on the phone. I don't consult. I just do it through email, because that's so. I want to say is that the situation now is much worse than when Max was going through this, because of what's going on with the environment, all the other assaults on our system. These kids now are much sicker, and they're getting the treatment is much harder. And so the patience must be much greater. Patience is a big factor. With Max, you know, I would say he was a relatively simpler case. And all we did, this was before I found homeopathy. I heard about something called the Feingold diet. Now we understand diet and autism, but back then we didn't. And he was addicted to milk, which is one of the main things to watch out for. And he was like drinking 8 bottles of milk a day.
Wow.
It was like his lovey. He wanted milk, milk, milk. Mm-hmm. And so we took him off of milk. We put him on goat milk, actually, but just much less. And mm-hmm. that was our first change. Wow. He just was somehow less in a dream world when we took the milk away. Mm-hmm. He was still starting to show more autistic behaviors like echolalia, repeating what you said, and various other things.
Yeah.
But he was less walking around in a dream world at that mm-hmm. point. So that was the main thing. And osteopathy. Mm-hmm. We took him to an osteopath, and that he up to that point he didn't want to be hugged. He was like, you know,
that's very common.
And he really started becoming more affectionate after like osteopathy, you know, cranial work.
Mm-hmm.
But now kids, of course, are using so much more, you know, all these diets and other things. And,
I think that connection is a big thing for families with children with autism. I have a few in my clinic as well, and I have a specific remedy that I've had really good success with, just to help with that eye connection and contact and all that. And so many moms have said, if you can't help me any further, I'm happy as it is, because he's looking at me and he's cuddling me. So that is a big thing, hey?
Right. I think also, you know, by the way, if people go to my website, Impossible Cure, I have like 4 years of radio shows I did. And I alternate between me sort of teaching And one of them is on the psychological aspects for the parent. So mm-hmm. that's also very important. And a lot, I think it's really important that parents not go into despair, that they have a vision that their kid mm-hmm. can get better.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, accept the way their kids are. And it's a very difficult combination to see this vision.
I'd love to talk about as well, actually, just because the other aspect I see in the clinic is the huge amount of pressure that it puts on the family unit. And obviously divorce rates are much higher in families with children with autism. So, you know, any sort of nuggets of advice that you can give about.
Yes, actually, our the homeopath who treated Max then is like a brother to me. He's like mm-hmm. my kid's uncle. So wow. He's not a homeopath anymore. He's really kind of a member of our family. And he said that he thought that the solidity of our family was a big factor.
Mm-hmm.
And his practice is probably mostly autistic kids now because of my book. And he said that when there's like all this, you know, autistic kids are kind of psychic. They know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think Max is psychic. He's not anymore. But when I remember when he was like 5 or something, I was driving in the car, was thinking about something, and he started talking about what I was thinking of.
My kids do that too. It's amazing, hey? I think they're just so, children are so in tune with our energies. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I think it's really important that I say the parents should be under homeopathic treatment.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good point you're making.
And like, you know, and so eventually every single person in our family started going to the homeopath. And I talk about that in the book too. It sort of starts this ball rolling of this kind of everybody's feeding off each other's growth
completely.
And healing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So. And as mothers, we tend to always take the kids into the therapist first. But in reality, I always say to my families, if the mum comes in first, because I only treat women and children, but if the mum just came in first, you probably wouldn't really need to treat the rest of the family because they just tend to feed off our energy, don't they? It sucks, but
it's
true.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, they always seem to bring the kids in first, but it's so important, like you said, for the whole family to be under homeopathic treatment to get the best result.
Yeah.
And, you know, homeopathy is so complex and it's so hard explaining it to people that don't know what it is. And I'm conscious of the fact that some people are going to be listening to this episode that might not even know what homeopathy is. So do you have like an elevated pitch, you know, 20 to 30 seconds of how you would describe what homeopathy is?
30 seconds, very difficult.
I know, it's very hard.
I got to say, one of the first things I say is that I don't know about Australia, but in the United States, the word homeopathy is used for all alternative medicine.
Basis. Same here.
So that's the first thing I say. I said homeopathy is not a diet. It's not a general thing for alternative medicine. It's a mm-hmm. specific type of alternative medicine. I say, you know, in the health food store, those little tubes with the teeny little white pills, mm-hmm. that's homeopathy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not herbal, it's not a diet, it's mm-hmm. not supplements, it's not any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing I say, because people actually don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always use this example.
Mm-hmm.
To really explain the principle of, you know, this law of similars. Mm-hmm. I said, and I like this better than the onion one that people use. I said, you know how like you want to drink coffee? Why do you want to drink coffee? Because it makes you alert and you're all excited and your mind is clearer and your mind is maybe racing. And I said, and you know how sometimes it gives you diarrhea or makes you have to go to the bathroom and it gives you heart palpitations. I said, those are the symptoms of coffee, and you want to take it because it's like it really affects you. I said, well, interestingly, let's say you have insomnia, and it's not just the kind of insomnia after a wild party, and you're all excited, and your mind's full of thoughts, and you're very happy, and maybe you have diarrhea too. Your heart's beating fast. then that might be a case where you can go to sleep if you take this remedy made from coffee. But you don't drink some more coffee. You take it in this really, really dilute form. It's the energy of coffee, and that will trigger a shift in you to sleep. But it's not. And then I usually say, but there's other kinds of insomnia. You know, when you're really upset and you wake up in the middle of the night and you're worrying about work, that's not coffee. That's a different remedy. So I said, that's how it works. You give something that matches your state. It's an energy that matches your state. And somehow it gets your body to heal from that state. That's the kind of thing I usually say. But it's not 30 seconds. Well, because more people think about drinking coffee than they do about peeling an onion.
Exactly. So while we're on the topic of how complex homeopathy is, apparently scientists still can't explain how gravity works completely. They have some idea, but they can't completely explain. We've got a great centre here in Perth called SciTech, and my kids love going there, and they've got all these sciencey things, and there was a display on gravity, and it said, scientists still can't explain how gravity works. And then I just had a giggle because, 200 years later, we still can't quite explain how homeopathy works, but it works. And we've got some really good theories. So what are some of the most popular theories that are out there at the moment on how homeopathy works?
Well, there's several. There's several, do you want me to really go through?
Go for it.
My book. So like in chapter 7, I have a lot of scientific studies, but then I also have a whole section on, well, how does it work? And the very most simplistic theory is this action counteraction. And the body always wants to be in homeostasis. It wants to be in a sort of steady state. And so if you push, I like to think of it as a pendulum, a pendulum. It wants to be in the middle, but if you push it one way, it kind of goes back the other way. So, and you can test this out for yourself. I remember doing this with my kids. I did it in their class. If you put your hand in really cold water, it will get really hot when you take it out. And similarly with hot water. So that's action counteraction, and that's why giving it a similar energy can move it in the opposite direction. So if you're sick and state in this state over here, in a state where the pendulum is off kilter, if you give it a little of the same energy, you kind of, it's like pulling the pendulum up, and it gets it unstuck and it swings back down. So action counteraction. Another one is that you can think of your body as an energetic state, and if you give it something that matches your energetic state, it sort of strengthens your energy and enables it to work better. That's a sort of resonance with your energy. Another one, which is more, I think, the more recent theories, and it's actually a bit similar to Hahnemann's theory, and it's a theory of replacement. So think of it this way. This is actually connected to complexity theory. So you're in a state, when you're sick, you're like stuck. You're stuck in this chronic state you can't get out of. You're stuck. So how can you get unstuck? Well, if you give the body a signal that's very close to your stuck state, it will sort of go, it'll get unstuck because it will go to this similar thing that's very close to the stuck state. And then it will somehow lose its stuckness because it's gone over to this new state. And this is similar to this complexity idea of attractors, where a very similar attractor, your state will be attracted to that. Mm-hmm. If it's really different than your state, your state won't attract to it, right? But if it's close, you might. And so it shifts you into a different, into the a state. And once you get shift out of it, then your body can start taking over and healing as it should. So,
amazing.
Those are three.
And I was just listening to the AHA here in Australia. They had a conference in May, and Dr. Alex Tournier from the Homeopathic Research Institute was speaking on there about all the work that they're doing now. And he's about to move to Switzerland to go and work at a university there. It's very exciting because Switzerland obviously has homeopathy as part of their constitution. And so I think there's going to be some huge scientific things coming out of that. And as they are developing more and more high-tech electron microscopes and things, it's not my area of expertise, but they're able to detect nanoparticles in the remedies. And
Right. That's the current, everybody's into the whole sort of nanoparticle theory. Mm-hmm. You know, personally, I hate to push it back into materialism, even at a level. I like it under the energetic level, but, and, you know, there is a science that it's energy too, and I think of it as being in the etheric body, which is the energy body surrounding our body. So here's some evidence for that. So the Jacques Benveniste, who was nominated for a Nobel Prize, and later Luc Montagnier, another French scientist who did win the Nobel Prize, have gotten interested in this. And they found that Jacques Benveniste, that the highly dilute and shaken, this is how the remedies are made, not just diluted but shaken, creates a signal that can be recorded, electronic signal. A vibrational signal that can be recorded electronically.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And that signal can be transmitted on an email and then played back into water like thousands of miles away, and it will still have the same effects.
Amazing.
So that's an indication that it's not about it's not about a particle, it's about a vibration that can be recorded, because sound is a vibration.
Incredible.
So this Luc Montagnier has also found that other substances like DNA and stuff can also be potentized, and the signal derived from it and have the same effect. So, yes, I think, you know, if you ask me if science can be, I don't know. Ask me in 50 years, I think this will become not known instead of, but a paper I wrote saying, why is this being suppressed? When Luc Montagnier started working on it, he lost all his funding in France, even though he won the Nobel Prize for making the connection between HIV and AIDS, and had to move his lab to, I think, China. I don't know if he's still there. Because why? Because think about it. If you could take any substance, including an allopathic drug, and potentize it, and it still works, if you can email that signal to everybody on the planet, three free drugs, it would completely destroy the pharmaceutical industry.
I think there's so many examples of that worldwide, where amazing discoveries have been made, and the people who discovered those have then been ridiculed. You know, this is not new. It's happened for centuries.
In my view, you know, in the early days of Hahnemann, homeopathy was simply competition among doctors. Now I think underneath it all, the pharmaceutical industry knows that if the power of potentization actually was accepted, it would destroy their industry. And they are now the most powerful industry in the world. So that will be our block. And this is the underlying all the attacks on homeopathy, which are funded by the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, you just kind of touched a little bit there on energy medicine and things. And I want to lead into that with synchronicity. I listened to an interview you did about homeopathy and synchronicity, and it completely resonated with me. It's so my vibe. And I would love if you can speak about your definition of synchronicity and how you see that intertwined with homeopathy.
Right. Well, you know, after I finished my book, I started doing other explorations because my mind had been blown and open. So And I started learning about other energy medicine and then other spiritual things. And I ended up writing a second book. And a big theme of it was the concept of synchronicity. So what is a synchronicity? I mean, Jung came up with this term for the idea that things of similar meaning tend to co-occur in time and space. So he came up with the idea when, like, some patient of his was in a certain state which caused a certain dream, and the dream was about this beetle. And then as she was talking about her dream, this beetle starts rapping on the window. And so he kind of put two and two together. So really, a synchronicity is when like vibrations, I think of it as, I call them fields of meaning, things with similar meaning have a somehow a similar vibration at some level of reality, and they attract in time and space. And it causes these, what we call uncanny coincidences, to appear. So, and then, like, it was actually a student of Jung who was a homeopath, Christopher Wimpont, mm-hmm. whose son now, Ron Wimpont, is a homeopath. I think Christopher Wimpont has died, but his son, Ron Wimpont, is a prominent homeopath in the United States.
Wow.
He's a doctor, too. So Wimpont wrote this book. He was a student of Jung, and he tied this into how the law of similars. And he said that somehow, this is a bit like the substitution theory, which is that the remedy has a similar vibration as the patient. And so, in a way, just think about this. Homeopathy might be treatment based on synchronicity. So you're, instead of just having these things happen coincidentally, you're bringing these two together willfully, and somehow that's curative. Okay, so there's something about the phenomenon of synchronicity causes healing. Now, in my life, and if you think about yours, when you've had like major synchronicities, it's often a sign of something very important in your life happening.
Absolutely.
So it's also sort of a form of healing. It's not just, it may be a way the world is working, but it's also, I think, a way in which other levels of reality are communicating with us. So here we're getting more way out, right? So it's like, it was true of how I met my husband. All these unbelievable synchronicities happen to make that happen. Very weird ones. And is there spirits in the astral plane sending us information through synchronicities? We don't know, but I've grown to believe that that's true.
I absolutely agree. I have to share this beautiful story with you because I see synchronicity in the clinic on a daily basis. Like a client will be saying something as I'm kind of like thinking about a remedy for them, and they will say like something that relates to that remedy. You know, it's just so amazing. But one of my favorite cases was a client about 6 months ago who came in, took her case, and she had all sorts of things going on. And I had just recently started playing around with butterfly remedies. And it's not that much Materia Medica on them, but I did some of the lectures with Louis Klein, and I bought Patricia LaRue's book. I've got Peter Fraser's book on insects. And there's some bits on butterflies in there. So I was playing around it. I recognized some butterfly themes in her, and I thought, I'm going to give her the blue morpho butterfly. And she had a long sleeve shirt on. I should have said that at the start, but had a long sleeve shirt on. Told her, I'm going to give you this butterfly remedy. It's made from the blue morpho butterfly. And she pulled up her shirt sleeve, and she had a blue butterfly tattoo on her arm. So that's why when I listen to you speak about synchronicity and homeopathy, I literally see that happening every day in the clinic. And it's so funny, like, you know, my assistants that are often in the room with me when I'm doing my online consults, they just laugh now because I tell them, you won't believe what happened. They'll be like, yeah, of course we believe you. Like, it happens every day. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, This happens. And this is one reason she has that blue, that tattoo on her arm. also.
Incredible.
Because it was healing to her in some way.
Absolutely. So I'd love to also lead into your second book, Active Consciousness. Can you please tell us a bit about the book, what it's about, how you came about writing it? And that was, is it 2011, I think it was published. So it's already a while ago now.
Yeah, it is a while. And I'm working on the third one. So now that book, in some ways, it's kind of a hodgepodge because it really... it weaves together all kinds of things that I believe are related to one another. So at some level, it's my theory about the, how the universe is working. And it weaves together stuff about synchronicity, Rupert Sheldrake's morphic fields, experiments, psychic experiments, homeopathy. And then it alternates. I studied for many years with a teacher, Gary Sherman, a meditation teacher, who teaches this method called perceptual integration. And so there's a lot of his exercises in the book about how to meditate. And then I go into my theory. Actually, I came up with this theory before homeopathy. I think so. I think I talk about it at the beginning of the book, how, because I'm a Trekkie, about how this episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the first episode, talks about how the captain goes into this wormhole, and he essentially enters the fourth dimension, and in that space, time and space are irrelevant. So anyway, so I talk about... if there's a part of us that exists in higher dimensionality, which I believe it does, then we can use that part of us to accomplish various things, like to do all the things that we think are psychic powers would be easily explained if we had a part of us that could see distant places, which would be, and so I explain that too. And then I also explain how this theory can explain like the various manifestation methods that people use, because we can actually influence how the future, actually see more about how the future will unfold and influence it through our thoughts and through this part of us. So that's also part of it. And then I also relate it all to the teachings of various esoteric teachers like Gurdjieff and Steiner, Kabbalah, stuff like that. So it really is this huge voyage, but it sounds so complicated, but I do believe I make it simple to read and it weaves you through this experience. It really, a friend of mine's reading it now and said, man, this is 10 books in one, which is sort of what I tend to be like, put my whole theory out there, but now I'm writing a third book, which really is developing more in a certain, more, I think, understandable way. Or like a lot of the ideas were percolating in that book, and now I kind of understand a little better.
Well, you know, Impossible Cure is the same. That it is. I can see why it was one of our prescribed textbooks, and I can see why so many homeopathic colleges around the world use it as one of their prescribed textbooks. Because, you know, as I was rereading it, I've reread it several times over the past 10 years, but it just struck me again how you have covered everything anyone could possibly want to know about homeopathy in that one book. And speaking of which, I'm so excited because we've just ordered 100 copies of your books. It's arriving tomorrow.
I was hoping
it would be here so that I could have like a pile of it around me. But we, you know, we're about to start a book club for the hundreds of mums that I work with and who are just so thirsty to learn more about homeopathy. And I was like, right, let's start a book club. And there's no better book that we could do this with than with yours. So is there any advice that you have for these mums who I almost feel like I need to warn them because they're about to have their minds blown reading this book because you cover everything, you know, that anyone could possibly want to know about homeopathy. So any advice for these mums as they delve deep into the world of homeopathy?
Well, first of all, it's not a how-to book. So it really doesn't talk about what remedies to take for what. but it really covers everything else. So that's why it's used as a textbook. And a lot of homeopaths require their patients to read it because it helps you become a better patient. Because homeopathy.
Sorry, I just have to tell you, now that you've said that, speaking of synchronicity, I have a client with a daughter with autism. We had a follow-up yesterday, and she's read your book. And she said, after reading Amy's book, I have all these things that I have to ask you now. So you are so right. It actually helped her be a better patient because she knew the types of information that would be helpful for me so that I could better help her. So I'm so glad that you clarified that.
Yes. Hmm. And so, yeah, it's used as a textbook. It's used in a lot of contexts. So what was I going to say?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay.
Any advice you have for these men?
I think that it's hard for people to understand homeopathy because they're used to allopathy. They're used to what a conventional doctor thinks and needs. And homeopathy is so different that that you need to really understand at least the basics of this completely different view of health, you know, to really be a good patient, to really understand it. You don't have to, but you can be much more effective of healing yourself and working with the homeopath if you understand this, the ideas of homeopathy. And so it covers my story. The book covers my story. It covers the history of homeopathy. And then it really goes into the philosophy, which is a very different philosophy of health, of disease and healing, mm-hmm. than conventional medicine. And I think that philosophy is what makes it also very threatening to conventional medicine, because a lot of what conventional medicine does is suppress symptoms, which homeopathy believes leads to deeper disease. So I discuss that. And I discuss the science, and I discuss how to prepare for appointments. And so it really covers. I've even had people say, my husband's like, you know, a scientist, but your book convinced him. So also with the second book too. So I that is, you know, I come from that. So maybe I try to make it a little more
mm-hmm. comprehensive.
Comprehensive and believable to the mm-hmm. average person, you know. Absolutely. And the average scientist even. Mm-hmm. So.
Absolutely. Just a fun little question before we start to wrap up. What are your three top homeopathic remedies that you use in your home and why?
Oh, my goodness.
It's hard to just choose three, hey?
Well, Arnica, of course. I mean, I would say that's number one. And then, like, the other ones, like, so there's first aid remedies, but our constitutional remedies, whatever they are at the time, which are the ones that fit us, mm-hmm. you know? So for me personally, I have often used aconite because I'm a kind of an anxious, like when I'm, but what are most, I got to say, I use this Apis gel for mosquito bites and, you know, bug bites. Mm-hmm. I use that a lot. Calendula.
Sexy.
Calendula cream, ointment gel, calendula, arnica. Those are maybe the top two. And our constitutional remedy.
That's so brilliant. I honestly could chat with you all day long, but I guess we should probably finish up at some stage. Can you just finally tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and what you do? And I know you've got several websites and places they can find you. So what's the best way for people to find out more about what you do?
Maybe the easiest is just go amylansky.com, which is my name, and that has my blog, and which the blog includes all my articles from both my newsletters. I have two newsletters, one for Active Consciousness, one for Impossible Cure. So, and then you can find links to my book websites from that site, so impossiblecure.com and activeconsciousness.com. Then you can find out how to order. On the Impossible Cure site, there's like lots of info for autism parents, obviously. And Yeah, that's it. And then, you know, third book forthcoming, hopefully next year.
Can't wait.
I've written the first draft, but I got to say COVID kind of got me all stymied, you know, so I got to get moving again. So
excellent. Thank you so much, Amy. It was so wonderful hanging out with you. I really appreciate your time. And, you know, when you're ever down under after all this craziness is gone, come say hi in Perth.
Well, I have another friend in Perth, so if I get back there, I'll go visit you too.
Wonderful. So, thank you so much.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, homies. I'd like to invite you to come and join me at the Homeopathy Hangout Podcast Facebook group, where we can discuss past episodes and you can help me decide on new content for the show. Also, be sure to check out my YouTube channel, where you'll find my free Homeopathy at Home 30-minute introduction video, which is perfect for anyone completely new to homeopathy who's ready to take charge of their own health. Just search for Eugenie Kruger Homeopathy on YouTube. And if you'd like to support this podcast, you can make a once-off $5 donation by visiting www.buymeacoffee.com/hangout. Or if you'd like to make a monthly donation, you can visit www.patreon.com/homeopathy hangout. And if you're in Australia and you'd like to purchase one of our beautiful homeopathic kits, single remedies, or one of our amazing combination remedies, visit www.eugeniekruger.com, where you can also sign up to our newsletter so you don't miss out on any special offers. And if you're interested in advertising on our show, please email info@eugeniekruger.com. Thanks so much for listening.